With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And so when I'm playing these songs and singing these songs, Police or ELO or Olivia Newton-John, I think part of it is I'm trying to recapture or re-experience some kind of magical, innocent love of music. And it works, you know, it's I'm getting those feelings back.
Welcome to Behind the Setlist, the podcast where artists tell the stories about the songs they perform live. I'm Jay Gilbert from Label Logic.
And I'm Glenn Peoples from Billboard. In this episode, we talked to Juliana Hatfield, the veteran indie musician who first gained widespread fame for the song Spin the Bottle, recorded as the Juliana Hatfield 3 on the soundtrack to Reality Bites, a 1994 movie starring Winona Ryder and Ethan Hawke. But Hatfield was well established by then, having formed the Boston band The Blake Babies in 1986 while a student at Berklee College of Music.
Her 20th studio album, Juliana Hatfield Sings ELO, is set to be released November 17th, and it's an album of, well, you guessed it, songs by Electric Light Orchestra. Pre-orders are being taken at her website, julianahatfield.com. It's actually her third album of cover songs, following Juliana Hatfield Sings Olivia Newton-John from 2018 and Juliana Hatfield Sings The Police from 2019.
And Juliana has had some amazing friendships. Over the years, she was briefly a member of the great indie rock band The Lemonheads in 92 and 93. She recorded an album with Paul Westerberg, the frontman for The Replacements, in 2016 as a duo called the I Don't Cares. She formed a group called Minor Alps with Matthew Cause from Not a Surf and released an album called Get There in 2013. And she's a member of an international supergroup called the Salt Collective that also includes Cause, Matthew Sweet, Richard Lloyd of Television, and Mitch Easter, who was a member of Let's Active and co-produced REM's early albums.
Yeah, one of the things we talked to her about are the changes over the years in the way that people enjoy their music. You know, streaming is more prevalent and people buy fewer albums, yet she continues to be an album-oriented artist. So now, without further ado, here's Juliana Hatfield behind the set list. Let it roll. Juliana, it's so nice to meet you, and thank you for joining us on Behind the Set List.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me.
We find that a lot of artists have never really been asked about their set list before, and we've had some really good conversations. And one of the things that I noticed looking at your last couple of set lists, you've ended with a couple of ELO songs, and I know you've got the ELO tribute album, Juliana Hatfield Sings ELO, coming November 17th. But it wasn't just the hits. There's a couple of surprises in there. Talk a little bit about how you came to love ELO and how you came to decide what songs to record.
Well, ELO just seemed to always be in my life. Growing up, ELO songs would come on the radio, and I was always mesmerized by the sound when ELO just lit up the radio, you know. And also, I remember being really scared by a couple of like the creepy choirs And what's that one song? The scary one that scared me as a kid. I always forget the name of it. They were just kind of part of my DNA almost. They were always there and very just so enjoyable and fascinating, all the layers of sounds and, you know, the strings and all the vocals. And so I just loved them, you know, and I still love them. And when I was choosing songs for the album, I definitely wanted to focus on some of the really well-known catchy ones like Telephone Line and Don't Bring Me Down, just because they're such great constructions and they're so fun and well-made. But then I wanted to highlight some of the more obscure stuff that maybe people hadn't heard of, like the later albums, like the Zoom album has the great song Ordinary Dream on it. And there's just a lot of stuff that I discovered after, you know, later that I hadn't known about that album, for example.
Yeah, me too. And Secret Messages.
Yep, that's from the 80s. Yeah. Really good. Jeff Lynne's short hair period. Yeah. Good stuff. He's still got it, you know. He's still writing great stuff, still playing and singing great.
Yeah.
And tell us about how the songs are live compared to what we'll hear on the album. ELO, you're dealing with a band that has a big production value, right? And what do you do when you play these live? What's it sound like?
Well, we don't have the spaceship. We don't have the space for that stage set, unfortunately, because I have a thing about spaceships, and I like thinking about spaceships and alien life. So it's difficult. It's difficult to play. It's difficult to get my head around how do you play an ELO song live when there's so many layers on the recordings. My recordings of ELO songs are slightly stripped down compared to ELO. Like, I don't have an orchestra or even a string quartet. I was figuring out workarounds with the strings, like with keyboards, and also I sang some of the string parts. So live, it's kind of it's a question, what do? You strip it down and you just kind of find certain parts that you can work in with the bass drums. And then vocally, the last couple of shows I did, I was lucky enough to have a couple of extra vocalists that I don't normally have. Like Kay Hanley was helping me out, and a couple of other people that were playing in the band. So you need some vocals, extra vocals for sure.
Yeah, it sounds like some of these bands that you grew up on, they were your comfort food, you know, the Olivia Newton-John, and you did the covers, you know, the Juliana Hatfield sings The Police. And again, with that album, which is so much fun to listen to, there were some surprises in there. It wasn't just, you know, Every Breath You Take. You had some deeper album tracks. So tell us a little bit about your relationship with The Police.
Well, I think that with The Police, I had more of a deeper, more thorough knowledge of the catalog than I did with ELO. I think that Jeff Lynne and ELO, Jeff Lynne was more of an enigma to me. I never really was too knowledgeable or focused on him. It was more just like the whole sound and vibe of ELO. But with The Police, I was very much, I would call Sting an early idol of mine. And I was in a cover band in high school in which I sang a lot of Police songs. And I just felt really connected to him in a way that I maybe wasn't with Jeff Lynne. A different type of a way, more of an emotional connection somehow. And also my vocal range was very, it was really not easy for me to sing Police songs. Somehow the phrasing and the range was it really was like I had a real affinity for that. So playing and singing the Police songs for me was like putting on a glove that fit me really well. And yeah, there is also that it's like an escape back to a more more innocent time, I guess, when I'm singing those songs. It's like I was full of hope back then, and just like the mystery and the magic of music was first enveloping me, you know, and I was just very excited about it. And so when I'm playing these songs and singing these songs, Police or ELO or Olivia Newton-John, I think part of it is I'm trying to recapture or re-experience some kind of magical, innocent love of music. And it works, you know, it's I'm getting those feelings back. Yeah.
One of the songs that has been in your sets a lot from that Police cover albums is Hole in My Life. Probably safe to say that's a deep cut. It's a really dark song. I don't know what Sting was thinking when he wrote that song, but it's pretty depressing. What is it that attracts you to that song in particular?
Well, I'm attracted to the darkness. I could and can relate to the darkness. And that's one of the things I loved about Sting, was that he was exploring the shadow side. You know, he was not singing just happy love songs. He was really like getting really real, you know, and he was into Carl Jung and analysis. And I too got really into studying Jungian ideas, like the shadow side, the symbolism, things like that. So I find that stuff really interesting. Exploring the darkness that is in all of us. Some people are afraid or unwilling to acknowledge that is in all of us, but it is. And I think it's very healthy to kind of dive into it and to, you know, if you write about it and sing about it, it's a kind of a catharsis, I think. It's getting it out of your system, literally, really. And when you're mixing those dark ideas with music, it's extra cathartic, because you're literally like vomiting it out of you. You know, like you're getting these feelings out of you. It's like a very healthy release, I think. It's like a purging in a way. And you feel, after a show, I always feel like I've been cleansed in some way.
You have such a massive body of work. You've been doing this for a while. I mean, since you were very young, and you've recorded so much great music. How do you sit down when you're going to play a show and decide what you're going to play from what eras, what bands? How do you put that all together into a show?
It can be really difficult, because every year that goes by, I have more material. You know, I have more written because I keep making albums. And so, yeah, it's really hard. And every single time I sit down to write a set list, I always feel like my head's going to explode. Like, what do I do? And I'm always complaining to my bandmates, like, well, I can't make the set list. Help me. And then I just end up kind of thinking about what I like to play, and I try to pull some stuff from the beginning, you know, from the most popular album, or popular, quote unquote popular, the most widely heard. I'll play My Sister.
Sure.
I like to play My Sister. I think it's a really fun song to play, and it still resonates for me. And then if I have a new album, like the ELO album, I'll try to play a couple off the new album. And then I like to play a Police song, like Hole in My Life. It's always fun to play. Mm-hmm. And then I'll pull a few really obscure deep cuts from my own albums, just for fun, or just to confuse people, or to turn on the one or two people who know it. They'll be like, oh yeah, that one, like the song I play this OH is a song that is from my Made in China album, which is not a song that anyone ever requests, but I like to play it because it's fun and weird.
You're not shy about throwing in deep cuts from your own catalog then, because you have so much to work with, and maybe throw in a curveball occasionally that even most people might not be familiar with?
Yeah, I do that once in a while. There are albums of mine that are much more obscure than other albums, and and then I'll pick like a really deep cut from a really obscure album. Because I like it. I like the song. And also I like to just see if there's anyone out there who recognizes it and maybe is excited to hear it because it's not often played by me. I just have so many songs and I love so many of them that I like to unearth hidden songs once in a while.
Yeah.
Just to keep me on my toes and to entertain myself.
You had mentioned My Sister. I love the story about that song. And I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was your brother's girlfriend and really kind of helped turn you on to a lot of those early bands that you fell in love with. Talk a little, did I get that story right? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, the song is really about a lot of different things, but this woman who, she came to live with us for a while when my older brother went into the army, and she stayed on at our house, and she was older than he was. She was in her early 20s, and my mom was working all day long. And so this girl, Meg, she ended up being a really important person in my life. She really helped me deal with some things, and she brought her record collection into Milk Crates. And that was really a really good education for me, because it had all this great stuff from the era, like the early 80s, like The Replacements and X and like Dream Syndicate and just all kind of REM, the first REM stuff. And all that stuff became really important to me. And
how old were you this time?
I was a teen. I was probably 16. Mm. And up until then, I'd been listening to just like the AM pop radio hits. And I was really into Olivia Newton-John. And I liked Billy Joel. I never really told anyone that publicly, but I was really into Billy Joel and just really popular stuff until Meg came along with her record collection. And it was really like an opening my eyes to punk and post-punk and, you know, Black Flag and all that stuff, some hardcore. And it opened up this whole other realm for me. And I realized, really, with seeing what X was doing, I realized like, wow, I can be my weird, unpolished self and still sing these very melodic tunes, but it doesn't have to be all polished like Olivia songs. And I realized like, wow, I can actually be myself and people might like it. And that was just really a revelation for me. And the song, My Sister, there's a little bit of Meg in there, because Meg brought me to my first club show in Boston, which was an all-ages show, the Violent Femmes, opening for the Del Fuegos at this little club in Kenmore Square. And Meg brought me to that show. She had a car. And and that was like a really big deal for me, too, that show.
Mm-hmm. And you said you were in cover bands. Were you doing that in high school before? What preceded the Blake Babies in your career?
Well, I was starting at a young age. I was taking piano lessons. And I was playing piano all up until high school. I was studying piano. And then I went to, And then after Meg opened my eyes to, post-punk music and stuff like that, that's when I got into a cover band, and I was just singing in high school. I was just singing in this cover band with some friends of mine who needed a singer in their band. And the drummer in the cover band, the band was called The Squids. I don't know why. The drummer was obsessed with Neil Peart from Rush. So we played some Rush songs. I sang some Rush songs, which worked with my voice. Geddy Lee's voice is kind of high. Mm-hmm. And then we did a whole bunch of Police songs. And then I made them do a couple of X songs. None of them had ever heard of X. I made them do a couple of X songs. And we did some Pretenders and just kind of 80s stuff. I think we did a couple of Pat Benatar songs, maybe. Maybe a couple in excess.
Yeah.
And then came Berklee College of Music, and then the Blake Babies happened.
And at Berklee, you studied music, but you also did art as well. Do you still do art, painting, sketching?
Yeah, the art school came later. I graduated from Berkeley and then had my career started happening. And then later at I was in my 40s when I applied to art schools, and I ended up going to a one-year post-baccalaureate graduate program at the School of the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. That was a full-time year. And that was just kind of a break from music, and it was great. I still, I draw a lot. I mostly draw. I don't paint so much anymore.
Yeah.
I find it odd to say you took a break from music, because when I look at your career, it looks like you've continuously put out music for over 30 years, and you're always working on something, it seems.
I took that year off, though. I finished one album, and then I took the year to just be in art school full time. And I believe I did not make an album in that year of art school. I can't remember the timeline, but yeah, I think I felt like I was slacking off not making an album that year, but I was just trying to focus on the study and the artwork. Yeah. And then as soon as that was over, I went back to making albums.
You've had albums under major labels. You've had a lot of indie albums. Are you content now being on an indie? And, you know, do you feel the need to be with a larger company?
I do not feel that need, no. I mean, there are pros and cons with every situation. Mm-hmm. With record companies, also with just life, everything. I can see both sides of everything. And right now I'm really enjoying this relationship I have with American Laundromat Records. It's a really good working relationship, and I'm able to make pretty much an album a year if I can get it together, and they're able to do that and, you know, get it out there and promote it a little bit and get it to people, you know, get some cool vinyl mm-hmm. pressings. So right now, this situation's really good for me. I don't have to get burned out. I can do everything at this kind of smaller scale. It's nice for me right now. I'm enjoying the moment right now. Yeah.
Taking a look at the ELO album on your site, there's a lot of different versions, different colored vinyl, CDs, test pressings, a couple of cassette versions also. And, you know, I wonder what your thoughts are about being an album-oriented artist in the streaming world, when a lot of people want to listen to one song. We're in a streaming world. A lot of people listen to individual tracks, but you're doing albums, and a lot of albums still. Could you talk about that?
I was just talking to a friend of mine about this about an hour ago. He was talking about my new ELO album, and he was commenting that he thinks it's sequenced really well. He thinks that like the songs flow together really well. And I told him that I'm really glad to hear that, because I put a lot of effort into the sequencing of the album, of every album. I think it matters to me how the songs flow as the whole album, but I realize that there are not a lot of people that care, and that there are a lot of people who are not going to listen to a whole album, and that's okay with me. I know that a lot of people just will hear a song and not the album, but I don't think about what's happening in the modern world when I'm making music. I make music the way I like to make music, and the way I like to make music is to think of an album as a whole album of songs that are gonna, one song goes into another song, goes into another song. And maybe no one else cares, but my friend cares and I care. And so I think about that. Sequencing matters to me. I still listen to albums. I'm not the only person in the world who still listens to an album front to back. So there's no reason for me to give up putting an effort into the sequencing. I'll continue to do that. And it's fine if people want to just listen to individual songs. That's fine also. But
you're offering with this new release a vinyl single with a couple of songs on it. Did you grow up on purchasing vinyl singles?
Yeah. I mean, vinyl was what there was when I started buying music. It was vinyl and singles and cassettes, I guess. I don't remember buying any 8-tracks. I don't think I ever had an 8-track player. But yeah, it was vinyl and cassettes and then whatever else happened, CDs.
Do you remember some of those early vinyl 45s that you would bring home?
Oh, yeah. I had some weird stuff. Like, I had a Bob Welch Ebony Eyes single.
Mm-hmm.
I had an England Dan and John Ford Coley single. Just weird random stuff, like songs I heard on the radio and liked. So I bought the single.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. I was really into AM radio, pop radio.
Yeah.
And going back to an album we didn't talk about, we referenced it, your covers of Olivia Newton-John songs, and that's a fantastic record. And was that one of your favorite artists when you were young? And what, I think she was popular late 70s to early 80s.
Yeah, I love her so much. I related to her. Her character seemed just so likable to me. She seemed very so positive, but not in a overly showy way. Like her positivity seemed deliberate and important. Like she was not faking it. She wasn't trying to put anything over on anyone. She was like genuinely, she seemed very pure in her wanting to put across this sort of positive energy that was not cloying and wasn't overly sweet, but it seemed very genuine. She seemed genuine to me and not a faker. And also there's just the sound of her voice I found so beautiful. It's great songwriting. Great, great songwriting. John Farrar wrote a lot of that stuff. And then I was very, very much, very into Grease, the movie. And I really identified with the character Sandy at an important time in my life. And yeah, she was just like a big idol of mine.
And seems like a good fit for you. You know what? When I listen to your version of Have You Never Been Mellow, it seems like a perfect fit for you. You did a wonderful job with that.
Yeah, though that album, making that album was a big challenge because some of the songwriting was just very complex and surprisingly, deceptively complicated, and figuring out on all the arrangements. There's a lot going on in those songs if you really listen, and just a lot of stuff that's happening, and putting it all together was like a big, complex puzzle. And it was a lot of work, but I'm very proud of how it turned out.
Yeah. We were talking earlier. It seems as though you are the ultimate collaborator throughout your career. You've had so many great collaborations. Talk about how you put that together when you're deciding to either write or record or perform with another artist.
It's usually not something that I think about. It's just, these opportunities just kind of present themselves to me, and I don't really. It's almost like I don't make the choices. The things just fall into my lap. Like things just sort of happen. Like I don't even know how they happen, but people are just in my life, and we both have some free time, and so we decide to try to do something. It's like that kind of thing. I'm not a conceptual artist. I'm like, I'm an intuitive artist. And so I really don't overthink things. Sometimes I don't even think at all. And I just, something, a moment will present itself to me and I'll just go for it. And that's how things happen.
You know, I posed this question to Les Claypool in one of our recent episodes about his collaborations, because he's collaborated with so many great musicians, just as you have. And I'll ask you the same question. What is it about Juliana Hatfield that makes you a good collaborator, that people want to work with you?
Well, like I was talking about a minute ago, I think I have an open mind. You know, I don't overthink anything. I think to collaborate, it's good to not go into a project with any preconceived ideas about what you want it to be. You just have to kind of like go with the flow. And I mean, that is not to say that I'm like a marshmallow. I do care about how things work themselves out, and I can get, you know, I've butted heads with people in the studio, but we work, it's because we care and we need to work on certain things. But yeah, I think just like an open mind, and also it's good to not worry about the future outcome. You don't want to worry about how the project will be perceived or how it will be promoted. You just have to focus on being in there working on the music, because that's all that matters. You just have to focus on the music and the friendship. And I think if you're thinking about how the world is going to how the world is going to welcome the project, it's not good to think about that when you're working on it. You gotta have kind of blinders on and only care about the work.
When I think of your music, I think of it as full band, electric, live. Are you comfortable doing more stripped down acoustic, more sparse performances?
Yeah, I like to do that sometimes. It's nice to go do some band stuff and then do some solo stuff. I did a tour in December opening for the Lemonheads, and I was just playing an electric guitar, and it's really nice to do that sometimes. It's like a freedom, because I can play whatever I want and the band doesn't have to know it, because there's no band. So I can get really deep into the catalog and into covers. And I think I'm gonna do some shows in the fall like that, solo, just because I think it's time. I've done the past few tours with the band, and I think I'm gonna just to shake it up for myself, I think I'm gonna do some solo shows. Yeah, and try to experiment with playing some ELO songs unaccompanied, you know, I mean, with just my guitar. And that'll be a challenge to work to figure out some arrangements like that.
And after this album release, the ELO album, what comes next? Do you have any other projects you're working on?
Yeah, I'm writing another album of originals. That's what I'm doing right now.
It never stops.
It doesn't. What else am I going to do? I mean, I still like it. Thank God. I'm grateful that I still feel really inspired. And I know that's a great, I'm lucky that I'm still inspired.
Yeah. We had a guest tell us one time that there really isn't a choice. Music is who you are, not necessarily what you do. I thought that was interesting.
It kind of feels like that. Like, I've tried to quit music, but I can't. I always end up coming back. I can't quit it.
Juliana, thank you so much for joining us today. Can't wait to dig into this new album and see you when you're back out on the road.
All right. Thank you.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.